ओम अकिरतम अनंदस्य सर्वं सर्वसलकया चक्षुषिमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यं विष्णुं स्थापितं येन विद्यते सायं रूपतनामयं ददाति सापदन्ति सम् पञ्चकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसन्दं चित्रं पदनेभ्यो श्रीभ्यो नमो नमः So reading about the songs of separation of the Gaja Gopis from Krishna. While Krishna was wandering in the forest with his cowherd boyfriends, the Gopis were alone, separated from him, and in that separation they were experiencing Krishna. So we read the first two verses, there are 12 couplets, 12 double verses here. We read the first two, two and three, now we read 4 and 5. O girls, hanta chitram abala srinutedam harahasarasistiravayut nandasunorayamata jananam namadovarahi kujitavenu kujitavenu vindasobraja vishamrigagavo Venuvajya Ritya Chaita Saarat Sandra Dasta Kevala Dritta Karna Nidritta Likita Titra Mevasan. So the young ladies were speaking to each other in this way. Oh girls, Hanta Chitram Amala. Oh girls, how wonderful it is that the son of Nanda, who gives joy to the distressed, bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. That's interesting, isn't it? A smile is like a jeweled necklace. Why? First of all, it's shaped like a necklace, it's shaped like that. It's Manimala. And it's pearls. Now please hear something wonderful. So he has the goddess, the mark of the goddess, Dhruv. You have to turn very, very quietly, okay? Very quietly. So describing something wonderful about Krishna. What are the qualities? The son of Nanda Maharaj. So he is the son of Nanda Maharaj. And he gives joy to the distressed. And description of him, further description of him. He has the mark, the steady lightning, which means the mark of Lakshmi Devi on his chest. And he has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. If that's not wonderful enough, if one will actually seeing Krishna and describing him in that way, here's something wonderful. What does wonderful mean? That when you hear it, it fills you with wonder. How is this possibly happening? It's so amazing. So here's something wonderful. When Krishna vibrates his flute, Raja's bulls, deer, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, they are not near her, but at a great distance in groups, they are all captivated by the sound. What does it mean that they're captivated by the sound? That their consciousness is completely absorbed in the sound vibration. They cannot think of anything else. Their minds, their consciousness are completely controlled, captivated of someone. Captures another. They are forcibly brought under another's control, and there's nothing they can do about it. So So the cows, the bulls, the deer, they're in groups at a great distance. They're captivated, forcibly controlled, their minds completely absorbed, forcibly, by the power of Krishna's flute. This is what happens when he vibrates his flute. And they stop chewing the food in their mouths. These are the animals. Which animals? The deer, the cows, and the bulls. Because the deer, interestingly enough, the deer and the cows get along very well. I've heard this from Komarupa. The Nila guy. And the cows get along very well. Except that the cows are less territorial. And the Nilgai, like deer, antelope, they're more territorial. They won't allow the cows into their area, into their pen. But the cows don't mind if the Nilgai come into their pen. But other than that, they get along very well. So they stand in groups at a great distance, and they were all captivated by the sound, and they stopped chewing the food in their mouths, and they cocked their ears, stunned. They appear as if asleep, or like figures in a painting. So what is this describing? Because as Krishna's going to the forest, he's playing his flute, vibrating his flute, so that the, and bringing life back to the animals and separation. And the trees and creepers, because he's entering into the forest since the last day. So he's notifying them of his arrival. And all the animals there, they become stunned. Their ears stand up straight. And they're being stunned. They appear as if they're asleep. What comes to mind? What characteristics do they have if they're asleep? What's the prime characteristic of someone asleep? Their eyes are closed. Anything else?
They lie down.
Huh?
You used to lie down.
But they're standing. Do deers lie down? Maybe.
I think so, cows do.
No lying down for them.
No,
they appear to be asleep. And they're chewing. They stop chewing the food in their mouths. They just can't do anything. They're shocked. Stunned, they appear as if asleep. They're standing in groups. So they're definitely not lying down in groups. They appear as if asleep because they're not moving. And they're all like figures in a painting. They're stunned. Like we don't, when you're looking at a painting, literally the figures don't move. So they become immobile by the being captivated by the sound vibration, being forcibly taken over by the sound vibration of Krishna's flute. I'll just read the verse again. All girls, this son of Nanda, who gives joy to the distressed. So how is he giving joy to the distressed? Because they're hoping that he will be in front of them. He will come to them, have association with them. Because they're the ones who are distressed by his separation. They want him to give joy to them by being present before him. It's the only thing that's going to give joy. Their love is so incredible. It's complete and focused. This son of Nanda Maharaj, who gives joy to the distressed, bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, he rises bulls, deer, and cows standing in groups at a great distance are all captivated by the sound. And they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep or like figures in a painting. The word stira vidyut, steady lightning, refers to the goddess of fortune who resides on the chest of the Supreme Lord. It means the goddess of fortune is always serving the Supreme Lord. Everyone is looking for the favor of the Goddess of Fortune. Everyone wishes that fortune dwell with them. But the Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi Devi, is famous for being chanchal, or flickering or unsteady. Sometimes she favors us and we think we have captured her. But then very quickly, or after some time, the Goddess of Fortune leaves us, good fortune leaves us without good fortune, and goes somewhere else. It's someone else's turn to have some association with the Goddess of Fortune. And there's a reason for this, and this is because everyone has faulty qualities and lacks something. It's because of good qualities that fortune resides with us. But when we lack something and have faults, then why should the Goddess of Fortune stay with us continuously? And only Krishna is faultless, so she always stays with him. She is on his chest, but wishes to serve his feet. So when the animals of Vrindavan, this is continuing the purport, hear the sound of the flute, they become stunned in ecstasy, and thus they stop chewing their food and cannot swallow it. The gopis in separation from Krishna marvel at the extraordinary effect of the Lord's flute playing. Sridhara Swami gives the following explanation to the compound word Harahasa, which compares Lord Krishna's smile to a necklace. The word can mean, he whose smile is brilliantly clear, like a jeweled necklace, or he whose smile is reflected from his jeweled necklaces. Because while Krishna plays his flute, he bends his head down and smiles. The word can also mean, he whose smile, like a jeweled necklace, casts its effulgence upon his chest, or he whose necklace shines brilliantly, just like a smile. Necklaces. Let's hear what Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur has to say. Probably. What to speak of the intelligent wives of the demigods from the last set of verses, who are most expert practitioners of social niceties? Even the foolish animals become completely captivated by Krishna's flute, because the last verse described how Krishna Narityam Vanita Utsava Rupashila. They're hearing, the demigoddesses are hearing the sound of Krishna's flute as if it's the greatest festival of sounds. And then it affects them. So the gopis are now saying, so the demigoddesses, because they're cultured, and cultured persons, they appreciate finities. They appreciate the subtleties of music and culture, because they are cultured, they are refined. But Krishna's flute playing doesn't only captivate them, but it even captivates the dumb animals. So how could we, the mood is, how could we, from the topmost to the lowest, everyone is captivated. So how could we not be captivated by Krishna's flute? That's the intention there. Another gopi spoke, this is wonderful. More amazing than the most amazing thing. Oh weak girls, Abala. From the very beginning, Krishna has stolen the strength of your chastity towards your husbands. On Krishna's cloud-like chest, effulgent with a pearl necklace resembling a row of flying cranes, flashes the golden line of Lakshmi, like stationary lightning. O gopis, the sunlight of your faithfulness towards your husband has been obscured by that cloud of Krishna's chest with its lightning and flying cranes. Krishna makes you who are suffering become the object of ridicule for society. How does he do this? Krishna does this simply by vibrating his flute. When you hear the seductive song of Krishna's flute, the knots of your garments loosen and the garlands in your hair fall down. You then attain the state of madness in love, unmad, and become the object of everyone else's ridicule. So how powerful. The girls are talking to each other. We see what happens when you hear Krishna's flute. Your hearts, the external symptoms reveal what's happening inside to you. You're going mad in your ecstatic love, and all you can do is think about Krishna. So this is this from the social point of view. It sounds quite terrible, as one person told me, one Christian convert in Bangladesh said to me, how could you worship a god who dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night? And this type of information about Krishna's effects, the effects of Krishna's flute playing, etc., on the gopis, is not meant for unqualified ears, because otherwise, if someone doesn't understand who Krishna is and what it means, at least to some degree, to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's misunderstood to appear like immorality. But Krishna, his actions, they define morality. And of course, from the point of view of the philosophical point of view, the gopis actually had no husbands. And therefore, Jiva Goswami always explains, he explains in Gopal Champu and also in the Sandarbhas, how in Bhakti Sandarbha, how actually the gopis were actually married to Krishna, because it is too hard for the conditioned soul to comprehend the position of Krishna, and that the soul's natural position is to be fully surrendered and enamored by Krishna. This is every soul's natural position, and that enamorment fully loving Krishna takes different forms, and the forms of that love are called rasa, or ecstatic love, or the tasting of ecstatic love, or mellows. So this is just simply one of the mellows tasted by a soul who wants to love Krishna in this mood. So it is not that the relationship that Krishna has with the gopis is like the relationships that go on in the material world. It's not like that. It's that the relationships that go on in the material world are reflections, and we say use the term perverted reflections, of the spiritual world. Because here in the material world, everyone is thinking of themselves to be like that one who is attractive to everyone else. Everyone is thinking of themselves as the center. Everyone is thinking of themselves as if we were the supreme. And therefore, we live in this illusory bubble of consciousness in which we're the center, and we want everyone to love us just for being us. But this is a reflection of the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, Krishna is that person who everyone loves just because he's him. And why does everyone love him because he's him? Because he's all attractive. And he's faultless. And he's all powerful. And he possesses all opulence, all beauty, all strength, all wealth, all renunciation, all fame. But here in the reflection, that which possesses no true beauty, no true fame, no true strength, no true wealth, no true renunciation, and no true knowledge, wishes to be the all-attractive center of existence. And therefore, it's the only word that can describe it is
maya or illusion, or you could say ludicrous. What's another word for ludicrous? Absurd. And it's obviously absurd because we want to be the center, but no one else will agree with us. No one else will agree that we should be the center. So this is something very, very special. And therefore the Bhagavatam says, namatsaranam, namatsaranam satam param, namatsaranam satam. That this literature is actually for those who have no envy in their heart. It is the absolute truth. It is the highest reality, where Krishna is the center. It's a description of what the spiritual world is like, but it's not for those who have envy within their heart, who wish to be the center. It's for those who wish to place Krishna in the center. Sometimes we may think, or I think, that if Krishna is all merciful and Krishna is all kind, why doesn't he just see the suffering of this world and bring everyone back to Krishna Loka? I mean, why not? He's all powerful. So we have our reasons for that, for explaining that to ourselves and to others, that we have free will, etc. And these, of course, are true. But we can't. We can't be in the spiritual world because Krishna is the center, and as long as we keep ourselves in the center, we just simply can't be there, because it's a matter of consciousness. A person who has pure consciousness, he's in the spiritual world even when he's seemingly in the material world. It's called Jivan Mukta, or Paramhansa. He's taking the essence of existence. He's capturing the essence of existence from every situation he's in. A person who has that, Vishwapurna Sukhayate, a person who is Krishna conscious wherever he is. I think somewhere in the second canto, Prabhupada says in one purport that he's watching Krishna's lila going on in his heart, just like what?
Television.
Now, how would you like to, you just need the right receiver to tune into that channel, the right dish. And the dish is Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanina. So if we have love for Krishna, and this is precisely what captivates Krishna and brings us to the spiritual world, and even controls Krishna. Because just like here, the sound of Krishna's flute has captivated the demigoddesses, the demigods, and the deers and the bulls and the cows, the love of the devotees completely captivates Krishna. Krishna describes this in the 11th canto while speaking to Uddhava. His heart is discussing, Krishna is discussing the best of processes, and it is to think of him with great love. And he said, and explains how the Braja Gopis and the other residents of Vrindavan are always doing this, and they've completely captivated him. So this is how the Supreme Lord, with all his power and glory and all his opulences, he's not in any way a dictator. If you don't love me, you can't be happy. Like that. He's just the all-attractive, loving person. And he is not a dictator. Rather, he becomes completely captivated by his devotees. He becomes the servant of everyone. The Supreme Lord becomes a servant of all his devotees, and he acts in such a way that he acts in such a way that they're pleased. That's what a servant's business is to do. to please one's master. So Krishna, his consciousness, when he's dealing with the residents of Vrindavan, as even as the supreme controller, becomes completely controlled by their love and dances to their pleasure. So this is this quality of the Supreme Lord Atma Prajanta Vajanyata, where he gives himself to his devotees, Bhakta Vatsali Atma Prajanta Vajanyata, is so wonderful, and this is especially true in Vrindavan. So the gopis are saying that by Krishna's chest with its lightning and flying cranes of the necklaces and the goddess of fortune marked on his chest makes you who are suffering become the object of ridicule for society. Because everyone notices, this is how they're thinking, everyone sees how we're completely captivated by Krishna. And they talk about it. So this is speaking about something that's completely spiritual. From the person speaking about it, not thinking in terms of it being spiritual, but thinking of it in terms, just simply in terms of their love for Krishna. And thinking of it in terms of the externally describing the situation. But the actual truth is that the whole situation in Vrindavan is simply meant to churn the spiritual emotions of both Krishna and the Braja Gopikas and the other residents of Vrindavan. What to speak of humans like us? Even dumb animals become stunned by the vibration of Krishna's flute. When the bulls, the cows, and forest animals hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they become stunned. They cannot swallow the grass that they are chewing. The sound of the flute steals their minds and stops the functioning of their senses so that they appear as if asleep. The chewed grass remains in their mouth without falling to the ground because they are experiencing the ecstasy. The technical term is Sanchari Bhava or Vyabhachari, of being stunned. As their ecstasies become stronger, so they're chewing and they hear the sound of Krishna's flute in it, and the grass just stays there. As their ecstasy becomes stronger, they become immobilized. They can't move. And their breathing almost stops. You're right. Their breathing is lessened. Then, rather than appearing like statues, they look like painted pictures. Because there's no question of a painted picture, the person in the painted picture moving. And this gives rise to the mellow of wonderment or amazement known as adbhutaras. So within them, they're experiencing adbhutaras, or wonderment, or extreme astonishment. Look at the effect of Krishna's flute. Completely captivating. Even the deers and the cows and the bulls. What to speak of us who naturally love Krishna? Because demigoddesses naturally love demigods. And cows naturally love bulls, have a relationship with bulls. But we're from the same coward village as Krishna, and we naturally have a relation, naturally grew up with him. And naturally, we would love him. So what to speak of us naturally, who naturally would love Krishna? Even the animals and the demigoddesses love him and are completely captivated by the flute playing. So seeing that, they're struck with wonder. And that wonderment is an ecstasy, a secondary ecstasy called adbhuta, adbhuta rasa. verse. So the first verse of the couplet verses describe the demigoddesses. The second, and it's, of course, it's the gopis describing this. The second verse, second couplet of verses, describes the cows, the deers, and the bulls and their experience while hearing the sounds of Krishna's flute. And all this is going on in their minds. And Krishna is actually appearing there in their minds as they're hearing the sound of the flute as he's far away in the forest. Now the next one's two, and the next couplet is four. Makes it a what? Quadruplet. This one is two. My dear gopis. Because this is actually a song, and the words are very sweet, and they can be sung, but not by me. My dear gopi, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their waters stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. So what are their arms? Well, maybe it's either waves, trembling, moving. They're unfortunate because they cannot move from their banks to go to Krishna, because they're controlled by their banks. And similarly, the gopis, they're unfortunate. They're saying the rivers are unfortunate like us because we can't, we are controlled by our families and we can't go to Krishna. So we're unfortunate. And they say the rivers, they're not, so they say they're impious, because the way that they think is that misery and difficulties and misfortune come from impiety, previously or currently performed improper actions that restrict one from enjoyment. And piety, punya, brings the facility to get what one desires and enjoyment. So instead of getting, being pious enough to be able to go to Krishna, they eagerly wait for the wind only to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. So this is, they're describing their own situation. We can't go to him. This is all we can do, is just wait for the wind to come and bring some dust from his lotus feet. So how sensitive they are to everything connected with Krishna. But like us, the rivers are not very pious. They just merely wait with their arms trembling out of love, their waves trembling like the gopis' arms are trembling. And again, the beginning of the verse. My dear gopis, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. So he's decorated in such a way that everyone's attention is attracted. Then in the company of Balaram, so when he's dressed in this Natabara way, also like the best of dancers, like a dramatic actor on stage, a little somewhat flamboyant. Then, when he's dressed in this way, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. And then the rivers nearby. So first the demigoddesses, and the demigods were up here, and then the next is the cows and animals, and then even less conscious than the cows and animals are the rivers. They're unconscious living entities. So cows are, and animals are a little bit conscious, somewhat conscious, and demigods are so conscious, but even the rivers, which are unconscious, aspandaram gatimatam pulukatam, that they're changing their form. They can't. They're stunned in ecstasies. They stop moving, because rivers are always moving. The rivers never stop moving. They're always moving. But this river, when it hears the sound of Krishna's flute, it's so overcome by love and stunned that it stops moving. But what happens to the waves? The waves just tremble in ecstasy, just waiting to get something from Krishna. What consciousness is this? What consciousness is this? They're just waiting to get something. And of course, what the Mahabhagavata gopis are really just describing their own consciousness. This is the symptom of Mahabhagavata. They're describing their own consciousness. They see their own consciousness everywhere they look. And everyone does this, basically. They see their own consciousness everywhere they look. So they're seeing the ecstasies of even the rivers wherever they look, or the animals. The rivers stop flowing, just waiting to get, they're so eager to be with Krishna, to have some contact with Krishna, that even the wind, the air, the wind, the breezes carrying the dust of his lotus feet, or sometimes his fragrance, is completely welcome by them, and that's all they're longing for. They can't hope for more than that. But like us, they're waiting for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious. They can't go to him, and Krishna's mercy doesn't come to them. And thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. The gopis state here that the sound of Krishna's flute causes even inanimate objects like rivers to become conscious and then stunned in ecstasy. Just as the gopis cannot always be in Krishna's physical association, the rivers could not come to the Lord's lotus feet. Although they desired the Lord, their movement was checked by ecstasy, and by their arms, their waves, and their arms, their waves, trembled with love of Godhead. The comment of Vishnu Bhagavati Thakur. In this verse, the gopis state, what to speak of conscious beings such as bulls and deers, even the unconscious entities become stunned on hearing Krishna's flute. One other gopi spoke, when Mukunda is decorated with mineral powders such as red earth and leaves, peacock feathers or peacock feathers and flowers, he imitates the attire of wrestlers, yet he mocks the wrestlers with his incomparably brilliant beauty. When Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys call the cows by name, O Kalindi! O Gangi! O Davali! O Shamali! O Tilakini! O Madangamukhi! O Saraswati! Whoops. They call the cows by name, O Kalindi, O Gangi, O Saraswati. Then rivers such as the Yamuna, the Manasaganga, and Saraswati's, and others in Braj, even though they are unconscious, attain consciousness, thinking, oh, what good fortune we have. Krishna is calling us in order to bathe and dive in our waters. Let us break our banks with strong currents and float towards him. Though desiring in this way, because of being stunned with bliss, their natural movement is checked and their currents stop flowing. the hidden implication of the phrase Bhagna Gataya, broken movement, is that the river's worldly progress was spoiled because of failing to attain the happiness of physical association with Krishna, and because they became the laughing stock of other rivers. Their progress in the next life was also spoiled because of their transgressing the vows of chastity. Just see the misfortune of these rivers too. So they're seeing again their own situation everywhere. Again, this is the consciousness of a Mahabhagavata. But this is to some extent good fortune also, that the rivers were hankering for the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, which was carried to them by a favorable breeze. But even after attaining it, they cannot be satisfied, and they desire more. Like us gopis who sometimes get Krishna's association and sometimes are deprived of it, the rivers do not have bad fortune, but have only a little good fortune. The waves, the arms of the rivers, shake out of love, just as our arms also tremble with prema. Though their waters become solidified because of being stunned, they again liquefy. We also experience the water in our eyes drying up and solidifying, just like one who is lighting a sacrificial fire experiences his eyes drying up from the fire. In the same way, our movements are checked by our family members, husbands, brothers, and other relatives who prevented us from meeting Krishna, and thus we have lost the goal of our life. We have lost our fame and the chances for our future lives also. Like the rivers, we are also hankering for the dust from Krishna's lotus feet. So everything, this is what it means to be on a high platform. Everything, anything for Krishna's pleasure. There is no rule or regulation that can hold them back. This should never be imitated by someone who is not on this platform. But this is actually what it means. This is what being a lover of Krishna means. It means only going forward to Krishna, whatever it takes. And we're hearing it in the frame of reference of the Braja Gopis hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. But also Krishna told the same thing to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. You're so busy considering the morality of what's right and what's sinful and killing this one and killing that one and their relatives. You're so busy considering so many things. You're considering what's going to happen to the families. You're considering what's going to happen to you, what kind of reactions you're going to get for all the killing. But there's only one real point to consider, and that's whether or not the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. And therefore, Nimitta Karan, Bhava Savya Sachin. So the devotees, under the sway of love, and this is the natural response of love to the beloved's desire, is that they want to please. So when this desire to please, due to the intensity of love, is unlimitedly powerful, then nothing can stop it. Anything for Krishna, anything and everything for Krishna's pleasure. And of course this can't be imitated, or rather it shouldn't be imitated. In Krishna consciousness, there's never imitation in that sense. We should always go at the level that we're actually, that our adhikara is, our actual practical level of realization. And there may be something so high, and we should know that it's very, very, very high. And maybe in 100 births or 200 births or 11 million births or whatever, we may have it. But we should never imitate it now, at this point. We should act in a proper way according to our own actual realization. But we should know that something wonderful exists, the love that every living entity is longing for, every soul is longing for. It's there, and this is the description of those who have it, and what their consciousness is like, and what they see. What they see, what they experience, what they think. also able to hear this by the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam, the great Acharyas. Okay. Tonight we will end a little early. Any questions or comments? Yes.
I wonder why Vitalik is so led to the spiritual world even though she's demonic. But then why isn't he so aspiring back to his prime to sin sanctification? Get promoted to the spiritual world.
Well, all you have to do is be killed by Krishna. Either that or you could take initiation in the Putana Sampradaya. But she doesn't get to be what the devotees get. She gets to be like near Krishna, but not to be a mother of Krishna directly or anything like that. Like that. But she doesn't get direct association with Krishna. But that's what happened to Agasura too, because he was directly killed by Krishna. He was purified. And Keshi also. Keshi demon being directly killed by Krishna. Krishna's own fist, left hand, entered his mouth.
So it's possible for Krishna to immediately purify a demon. And why not immediately purify everybody?
Well, do you want him to immediately purify you?
Yeah, my love, that's simple.
Well, if it's a reason of because you'd like to make life simpler, he won't do it. But this is the mood of the devotees. If they're intensely longing to be with him and serve him, but they see that the impurities that they have in their hearts are such blockages, and they prohibit them, the impurities are prohibiting them from being with Krishna, and one could even say it tortures them. So on one hand, they want something, and the other hand, it's so far beyond their capacity. So the tension that's established by those two points is what evokes Krishna's mercy to them. But if our mood is, well, it'll be simpler if you just Krishna just purify us, and you know, then he won't. The fire has to be burning very brightly for him to do that.
But the power wasn't very.
She was right with Krishna. Mm-hmm. She was in the physical proximity with Krishna. To Krishna, she was right there, and to be physically with Krishna, and to have Krishna suck her body, or in case of Agasura, he entered his body and purified it, and in the case of Keshi, he inserted his left hand in his mouth. So it was the proximity. This is described, and then. And then another way to look at it is that if one sees that Krishna has given extraordinary mercy to someone, then there's a biblical story about this too. You know, what the talents, the man in the field. You know that story?
One got 10 talents, one got 5.
Well, someone needed his field. The man needed his field cut, and he went to some people early in the day, and he told them, "If you work all day long, I'll give you 5 pieces of gold, say, like that, 5 something rather." And they said, "Oh, great!" So they were working from, and then later in the day, he had to get the field finished by nightfall. So later in the day, he saw that just with these people, it's not going to get finished. So he found some more people and said, "I'll give you, if you just get out in the field and really work hard for the, you know, just in the afternoon, I'm going to give you 5 talents of gold." So they went out there and just in the afternoon and they worked and they got the same amount as the people who worked all day. So so what are the people who were working all day? They were happy that they were getting that amount of money, but when they see someone else get it for less work, then they became unhappy, right? So what's that called? Yes. But the mood of a devotee is actually, and this is actually described in Shastra, that when someone sees someone else get some undeserved mercy, he's just happy. And then hoping that one day Krishna will give me, or even more undeserving, some mercy. But that tension, what attracts Krishna is the deep longing, tatra loyam api mulam ekalam. If we don't have the deep longing, then it doesn't attract Krishna. What do you think of these explanations?
Mm.
Yeah, because it's easy for us to say, why doesn't he do this, and why doesn't he do that, and why doesn't he... You know, I'd prefer the temperature to be like in the daytime. It was a bit cold today also. It would be a lot simpler if it was warmer, because my knee was really hurting. So it would be warmer in the day, and raining at night would also be good. I'd like 2 inches tonight. Oh, excuse me, we're into centimeters now. Centimeters, we're like 2 to 3 tonight, and then for the next 5 days we'll have rain. And then after that we'll have sun. And then I'll come back later and I'll tell you what I want for breakfast tomorrow morning. And it'll be simpler if, you know what I mean? I'll bring it to an absurd degree, but this is how we think. I mean, this is how I think too. You know, why doesn't he do the thing? Why doesn't he do it the way I want? Because this.
It's param svatantra, unquestioned. Never can be questioned. He is the Lord, he is the Supreme, whatever he does, nobody can question.
But in the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's a transcendental autocrat. He's the boss. So it's so hard for a conditioned soul to accept this. You know, we're brought up in a democratic society. We're used to, at least by votes. Well, you know, if we all vote for... if we all vote that God should be merciful to the wretched, who
there's a theoretical concept of fairness also.
Of
fairness. It may not be practical, it may not be possible to do, but in theory, the idea that society should be fair to the individual. There's a concept like that. So
but that's what the Param Satya means. It means, like, when whatever he does, that's the definition of fair. Because he's the Supreme Absolute Truth. So when he dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night, that's the definition of morality. So we can explain that from the tattva point of view, from the point of view of philosophy, that every living entity is ultimately, he's the Swami, the master of every living entity, ultimately. And we could also explain that the gopis didn't have husbands. And that's how Narada Muni saw it. He was seeing things from the tattva point of view, and he saw that actually this drama is going on of the gopis running away from their husbands in the middle of the night, but it was only like a drama. But the persons who are meant to experience the rasa, they don't think of it like that. As a drama, so their viewpoint is considered the ultimate viewpoint. Because if they're thinking of it like a drama, and Krishna's thinking of it like a drama, then nothing's really going on. So their consciousness is fully involved in it. But from the tattva point of view, which is how Narada sees it, for example, There's no husbands. It's just the concept of husband that's there. So we can explain it from the tattva point of view, but we can also explain it from the point of view, the simple point of view. The simple is that whatever Krishna does is all good. But our vision, tiny, tiny vision, we can't see it like that because our vision is tiny. Because we're seeing it, everything in relationship to the material world. Thinking, well, if I was to be, you know, giving Putana, if I was the one giving liberation to anyone, you know, to everyone, if I was God, well, this is what I would do. But because we're seeing it from the point of view of a tiny soul with insignificant consciousness, you know, it's like, you know, everyone says, well, the prime minister should be doing this and the prime minister should be doing that. You know, everyone's happy to give their opinions. But someone who's actually in the position of prime minister, he knows how darn complicated everything is. You know, it's just so hard. But everyone can give their 2 cents worth of advice. You should be doing this and you should be doing that. So what to speak of us who have tiny, insignificant consciousness and Krishna, who is all-pervading and knows everything, and our mood is, from the point of view of fairness, Krishna, I think it would be more appropriate if you would do this. And here I am, you know, this tiny insect-like creature. So, and what to speak of from the point of view of eternity. So there's fairness, and then there's mercy. So if you're going to vote for fairness, probably better if we vote for mercy. Undeserved mercy, actually, is better off. Anyway, it's actually, you know, even though we're teasing a little bit, but it's actually, you know, I think about the same kind of question all the time, you know. Because no one likes suffering, basically. That's why. Why doesn't he? And see, Putana's glory and Sisupad, this was the same question that Krishna asked, that Yudhisthira Maharaj asked Narada Muni, that how is it that Sisupad, after the Rajasuya sacrifice, how he merged into the body of Krishna, and he got this Brahmasuyuja, it appeared to him like it was Brahmasuyuja. Well, great sages perform incredible austerities, and most of them can't even achieve this. So where's the fairness in this? That's the specific question he asked. Yeah. So Narada Muni answered it is that he was so pure because he was thinking about Krishna constantly. Even though he was thinking about Krishna in an inimical way, the thoughts of Krishna are so powerful. So the implication of that is that if he, in an inimical mood, was thinking of Krishna and got such a wonderful result, what to speak of someone who thinks about him with love? So this is the process. This is the process, the basic process of going home, is to think about Krishna with love. And the basic process of sadhana bhakti is to develop love for Krishna. That's the process. So if Krishna wants to, for some soul, and go like this, okay. So it's like, you know, what was the example? The example of the honorary university degree and things like that. It's okay. So if we're going to think, why doesn't everyone just get an honorary university degree? And no, so no one has to go to school. It's so much, it would be less simpler if no one had to go to school to get a degree.
Gopis position is not easily understood. Whose position? Gopis situation. But if we start up in a mind, in a mind, we say, I, this is the poet saying, I, in the dil mein hai tasveer yaar, jab zara darshan dikhai, that in the mirror of my heart, my beloved resides. And ever I bow my neck, I can see him. So he's always there with the gopis, whatever the situation. He goes to the forest or here and there.
Yeah.
He lives in their heart.
They can't see anything but him. That's Krishna consciousness. And we're getting the opportunity to hear this, even though we're not perhaps on the appropriate level to hear it, just so that we get an understanding of what love actually is and how it's very powerful and it's very attractive. Yeah.
You could say that if Krishna wanted to, he could force us against our free will to become pure part of our sinful reaction. He could force us against our free will to come back to Krishna, to this realm if he wanted to. So he couldn't force us against our free will to love him.
Yeah.
So what's the point of that question?
Well, why? Then someone would say, if he can't force us against our free will to love him, that means there's something he can't do.
Mm.
But the answer is that he leaves that part to us.
Mm.
That's the meaning of free will. Mm. And also that... Yeah.
Not that he can, but where's the love at all?
I don't want to love you. You should love me. I don't want to.
Mm.
Well, here, I'm going to make you love me. But I don't want to love you. You have to love me. I mean, that kind of a God isn't very attractive either, is he? I want to live in my own universe. I want to imagine that I'm the center of existence. Okay, go ahead. Come anytime you want to come home, come home. The door is always open. But you have to really want to come home. Especially... There's one verse also that mukti the kahichit nasma bhakti yoga, that Krishna gives liberation easily. For those who simply want liberation, he'll give that. But to give the keys to his private quarters, he doesn't give easily, and that's braja. You have to be completely trustworthy for that. And trustworthiness means love. There has to be love for that. Braja is the keys to his quiet. That's his private quarters. The most intimate dealings go on there. But that's what you said is what we want, isn't it? Why doesn't he just make it so I fully love him? And even though I don't want to, you know, I want to be the center. Why doesn't he just do that? It would make it so much easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the struggle to become a devotee is a struggle for a conditioned soul under the modes of nature. So Krishna gives himself to us in the form of the holy name.
There's a lot of insincerity behind it, because it's a demand, right?
Behind what?
Why did he?
Yeah. So, you know, usually, if I was in a less polite mood, I would have said, that's why I started with usually, because I'm usually in a less polite mood. But, you know, it's mind your own business. In a relationship, there's two sides always. So, usually we're minding the other person's business and telling them what they should be doing. So instead of telling Krishna what he should be doing, we should mind our own business and do what we should be doing. And let Krishna mind his own business, which he does very well. I mean, yeah. So his business he does, and our business we do. But I didn't say it because I was in a more polite mood.
He's all attractive, he's beautiful, and he's full of compassion and love, so shouldn't we look at what we can bring wrong from our side?
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
so. MYOB. When we used to say that, when we were growing up, we used to say MYOBE. means everyone. Mind your own business, everyone. But yet, I also think like that. Why doesn't he do this? Why doesn't he make it easy? Because it's so hard. It's a struggle.
In the Shastras, it's very difficult. Once one's becomes dangling the two languages.
Yes, very difficult.
And we hear about the number of people who take up Krishna consciousness, even amongst those who take it up, the ones who can stick at it.
Maya me tantaranti te, because there's actually so much written on this point. It's because we have to endeavor properly. Because Krishna, the Abhideya Tattva is pure devotional service, and Yabhilasi Dasanyam. It's not misra or mixed devotional service. We commit offenses. That is the main reason. We're offensive. Okay, but I find it an interesting topic myself.
Do we have any information about the demons in their previous life? Because what amazes me, like, they might be a devotees in previous life because they could see Krishna, that to enter in Vrindavan in their Leela.
Yeah.
And also give chivalrous rasa, so it's kind of pleasure they are giving to Krishna.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, many of them we do know about, especially in the Gauga Samhita. There's a lot of explanation of who the demons were. That's Sankar Tudor.
Were they devotees before? Or Nityasana? No.
No, they were usually pious, powerful living entities, maybe devotees to some degree who committed some offense and developed some bad mentality. But Gauga Samhita has Gauga Upanishad, isn't it? Which is it?
Gauga Samhita.
Yeah.
Well, the Puranas also, goes through all of them and the clients who they were in the previous life. Yeah. Since along with demons, it's a tiny bit of bhakti. Ali Maharaj's sister became returning, isn't it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think Bali Maharaj's sister. Pratana in a previous life was Bali Maharaj's sister.
Oh, there.
And she saw Vamanadeva and she was a bit attractive, but she was very angry because Vamanadeva took Bali Maharaj's kingdom.
Talking about being fair. I mean, he surrendered everything. What more do you want? And then he sent him to hell. Yeah. I mean, talk to your congressman about that one.
Your brother and I are just in gold villages and women, whatever you wanted.
He
took everything in.
And Bali Maharaj didn't complain. He said, well, it's all yours anyway. So now place your foot on my head because you're a devotee. That's why. And why I complain is because of the converse. Because it's the nature of love to do what is pleasing to the beloved. Because we don't have that spontaneous love, therefore it doesn't quite make sense to us what happens.
So Bali Maharaj's sister, she was attracted to Vamadeva, but she couldn't accept that it was fair what happened to him.
That reminds me of
a mistake next time.
One devotee who was attending law school, he told me this story, that in one of the law classes, and there was a big lawyer who was the professor. So one of the students, the teacher was saying, this is the law and this is what happens on this and this and this. And then one of the students said, well, that's not proper. It shouldn't be like that. Just sort of like you were saying. And then they were arguing. And then finally the student said, well, if that's the way it is, it's not fair. And the teacher looked at him and said, don't you ever use that F word in my class again. Excuse me. But I think about that all the time. Because this is the wrong place for fair. There's no fair in this world.
No, but. I have the concept of it should be.
Don't use that S word here again. There should be. Take that out of the tape, brother.
Right, that's a fact to the
It's so true, though. You know, this isn't the place of fair. This is the place of hardball politics. And because we're idealistic and things like that in a mundane way, which comes from some. Little bit of mundane piety, we don't really understand how this world works. So we don't really understand how the spiritual world works either. It's not a question of fair. It's a question of who you know. Same as this world, just a matter of who you know.
Yeah.
It all stems from who you know, and if you have good connections, you'll go home. That's all it is. You need blessings, because we're in such a, because mayam etan tarantite, the material world is very hard. This can't overcome it. We can never become good enough. There's just no way we can become good enough to get there. So instead of arguing, lower the bar, lower the standard so I can get in, we should become humble. That's the alternative. And just realize how much I want this. I have no qualification. Please, some extra mercy thrown my way, because I have no clue. And this is the mood of the devotees, the actual devotees. They have an incredibly intense desire, and they have an incredibly low estimation of their own capacity.
This is linked with first desire, then desire. So many questions will be solved by contemplating on these two words. Now the problem is we do very much.
First desire, then desire. Yeah.
That's
the way the world's
set up.
Yeah.
Almost like that.
See
this advertisement here? First desire, then credit card, and then...
Buy now, pay later.
Yeah, right. So many ways that's presented to us on so many levels.
Huh? Yeah.
That's the principle behind advertising.
We used to call it Me Too, Why Not? No, Me Too, Why Not? I mean, he can do it, Me Too, Why Not? But there's reasons why not, and usually we know the reasons why not better than anyone else.
But if you have the right intelligence and Krishna's reciprocating you, you're not saying something else with you.
Yeah.
You got the power to do what it needs to do something else. If you have the right intelligence, it's doing everything for you every moment. If you practice with presence, then why will you be looking at something else or the alternative that you are? Because you practice with presence.
You practice being in its presence.
Yeah.
Krishna consciousness.
You are in its presence. Why isn't it? Why are you?
Okay, good night. Have a good time. Good question.